Today we're doing a film analysis of the 1982 classic, Conan the Barbarian. Join along as we dissect the occult symbolism. We're going to discuss Nietzsche nihilism and Atlantis before we get into the overwhelming amount of Freemasonic symbolism. Order out of chaos, the lost word, solar worship, Osiris, serpent worship, caves, King Arthur, Set, G.I. Joe, and much more. Is Conan the Barbarian a story about destroying Freemasonry and hearing the lamentations of their women? Find out today on Occult Symbolism and Pop Culture. I'm your host, Isaac Weishaupt. I've been podcasting since 2014, clearing over 16 million downloads about topics just like today's. Now, forewarning, Conan the Barbarian, this is actually a massive universe that I am not an expert on at all. I only watched this movie for the first time recently, if you can believe that. Crazy, huh? I think I watched it less than a year ago for the first time. I watched Barbarian, then I watched the sequel, Conan the Destroyer, which was equally as fantastic. Then I watched Red Sonja, and I was like, eh. If you want my reviews, I'm on Letterboxd, at Isaac Weishaupt. Join and follow. I post my movie reviews there, and they're always witty. They're always fun. I think so. Now, the reason I'm going to do this show, and my angle is going to be just like the world of Twin Peaks, I am going to provide to you the in-depth expert analysis on occult symbolism of the film, okay? But like I said, there's books and a whole Conan the Barbarian universe behind this that I've not gotten to the bottom of. So if you're looking for that, I don't know, you might be disappointed, but join along. We're going to talk about the occult symbolism. And you might be asking yourself, well, should I watch this movie before we talk about it? And it's Conan the Barbarian is one of my favorite movies of all time. Just like that, right off the bat, I was like, how have I slept on this movie for 40 years? So in that sense, you got to watch this movie. If you're like me, you'd really enjoy it. Now, is it one of those deals where there's this surprising plot twist? No, not really. I mean, you could listen to this and then go watch it. I wouldn't be, destroying that much of the plot. Like, it's not that, that's not the enjoyable part of the film necessarily. So feel free to do whatever you want. It's pretty long though. 2 hours, 6 minutes, violating my 90-minute preference. But as you know, that doesn't necessarily make it bad. Who's in it? Well, come on. Arnold, of course, plays Conan the Barbarian. Arnold Schwarzenegger. Do I even need to introduce this guy? No, absolutely not. I watched the entire Netflix documentary series about the guy. Because, look, in the 80s, Arnold was a god to me. All right. Arnold was nothing less than a god to me in the 80s. The docuseries was kind of sad. It had him, he was shoveling donkey crap instead of going to therapy. The dude, he lost his whole family because he refuses to go to therapy. He's like, nah, I just go out there and shovel the donkey shit. The donkey scheisen. Them boomers, man, they're wild. But, the guy's done it all. The governor of California, Mr. Olympia, Mr. Universe. Nobody had a run like Arnold in the 80s and 90s. Nobody. You could tell me, and look, there's a special place in my heart for Rocky. Stallone. Van Damme, he's fine. Steven Seagal, he's fine. We're talking the Terminator series. Commando with my childhood crush, Alyssa Milano. The Running Man. All the Predator films. Well, two of them. Total Recall. True Lies. Twins. And Conan. I mean, name an actor with a better decade besides Leo or Tommy. Now, the guy's also very political. Republican, but married to Maria Shriver. That's JFK's niece. So, kind of like moderate Republican, I guess, maybe. Turns out his dad was an actual Nazi soldier, so. Ugh. Now, Wikipedia, I don't, you know, a lot of people are like, well, you look at Wikipedia. Well, you know, Wikipedia is easy. They're generally usually right. This is one where I'm like, I don't know if this is true. It says his PR on a clean and jerk was 298 pounds. No freaking way. Absolutely not. I am much smaller and much weaker than Arnold in his prime, and I can clean and jerk 235 from the floor. Ain't no way Arnold's maximum PR is 298. No way. I don't believe that. Now, who else is in the movie? James Earl Jones, who literally just died. Isn't that crazy? He plays Thulsa Doom. He died September 9th, 2024, at the age of 93, the number of Aleister Crowley's Thelema. Now, I didn't know much about James Earl Jones, so I looked him up. His film debut was in Kubrick's Dr. Strangelove. Not a bad start. Then he went on to play the voice of Darth Vader. I mean, that's a pretty good resume right there. That's solid. He was in Coming to America. He played the King or whatever. He was in The Sandlot. Filmed in Utah. Shout out to my Sandlot people out there. Lion King. And a bunch more. Now, he was also in the Army, so shout out to that, right? Went to Ranger School. Then he gets out and he's like, I'm going to do theater. Okay. You do you, bro. And I like that. I respect that. Who else is in there? Sandal Bergman as Valeria. Ben Davidson as Rector. He was an Oakland Raider. Shout out Raider Nation. He looks like... Oh, who does he look like in this movie? He's got the handlebar mustache. Putting out Motorhead vibes. Looks like Motorhead. Lemmy. Gary Lopez as Subotai. That dude was a world-class surfer. And then you've got Max von Sydow as King Orsic. Now, this guy died in March of 2020. Of course, COVID. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know how he died. He was in The Exorcist. He was in Minority Report with the second greatest actor of all time. In Shutter Island with the greatest actor of all time. And he was in Maniac Cop, another great movie I literally just watched for the first time. Sydow was, I'm going to read you from Wiki. Sydow was reported to be either an agnostic or an atheist. In 2012, he told Charlie Rose in an interview that Ingmar Bergman was a director he had worked with a bunch, okay? Ingmar Bergman had told him he would contact him after death to show him there was life after death. When Charlie Rose asked Sydow if he had in fact heard from Bergman, he replied that he had, but chose not to elaborate further on the exact meaning of this statement. In the same interview, he described himself as a doubter in his youth, but stated this doubt was gone and indicated he came to agree with Bergman's belief in the afterlife. So, isn't that something? This director buddy of his came and visited him after his death and turned him into more agnostic than atheist, I guess. A guy named William Smith plays Conan's father in the movie. This guy worked in Hollywood for 79 years. My God. Died at the age of 88. He was an Air Force vet and U.S. Air Force weightlifting and arm wrestling champion. No slouches in this movie. Now, the director, John Milius, a.k.a. the Zen Anarchist. This was his first film as a director. He wrote the first two Dirty Harry films, Apocalypse Now, one of my favorites, Red Dawn. He directed that one, too. He's the guy who came up with the lines, Charlie, don't surf. And I love the smell of napalm in the morning from Apocalypse Now. If you haven't seen Apocalypse Now, oh, man. You're in for a real treat. If you like Full Metal Jacket, you're going to love Apocalypse Now. Now, he's a fascinating guy. He said, my religion is surfing. His life was full of Japanese influences. He apparently tried to join the Marines because he wanted to go to Vietnam. Probably why he did Apocalypse Now, I'm guessing. He ended up going to film school at USC, and his classmates was George Lucas and a composer named Basil, I'm going to butcher this Greek name, Polydorus. who would turn out to be the composer for Conan the Barbarian. He aligns conservative, and he said he's an outsider to Hollywood. Quote, I'm not a reactionary. I'm just a right-wing extremist so far beyond the Christian identity people like that and stuff that they can't even imagine. I'm so far beyond that, I'm a Maoist. I'm an anarchist. I've always been an anarchist. Any true, real right-winger, if he goes far enough, hates all form of government because government should be done to cattle and not human beings. Interesting perspective. He also signed a petition in support of Roman Polanski in 2009. A lot of people have, okay, to be fair. Why? I don't know. Does that mean he's into the same stuff? I have no idea. I don't know. It's strange to me that so many people want to put their necks out for this guy. And there's a documentary that I'm definitely going to watch. I haven't seen it yet. Released in 2013. Now, fun fact. This is probably the funnest fact in this whole show. This director, Milius, came up with the idea to use an octagon-shaped ring when they started the UFC. That's right. And his affiliation with UFC, because he was a famous director at this point, got other investors interested because, you know, he was so famous. So you could, if you like UFC, as I do, you can thank the director of Conan the Barbarian, John Milius. Now, we're almost done here with the cast and crew. The story was written by the legend himself, Oliver Stone. This dude, he really went to Vietnam. Vietnam vet with Purple Heart, Oak Leaf Cluster, Bronze Star, National Defense Service Medal. I got one of those. Silver Star and more. He wrote Conan the Barbarian, Scarface, wrote and directed Platoon, Born on the 4th of July, with the second greatest actor of all time. Directed Wall Street, The Doors, starring Kyle MacLachlan, right? Our precious Dale Cooper. JFK, Natural Born Killers, one of my favorite movies of all time. And there's a series called The Untold History of the United States. I saw it on Netflix forever ago, or Showtime maybe. That's a good one. If you get a chance to watch Untold History of the United States, you'll enjoy that maybe. Also a very political guy, right? He doesn't like the American Empire stuff. Even though he was in the, you know, a war vet. But he gets labeled a conspiracy theorist all the time. He grew up near in Pottstown, PA, right near me. And he's kind of more, he seems more left wing. I can't speak for him. His son, Sean Stone, had a show on RT. He did a bunch of conspiracy stuff too. I remember he was on a show with Jesse Ventura back in the day. But yeah, Oliver Stone's fascinating too. And his son's very, very intriguing as well. Shout out to Sean Stone. Story of Conan came from Robert E. Howard. Now, this was a famous pulp fiction writer. We talked about, if you read Aliens, UFOs, and the Occult, Use Your Illusion 1, my first alien book, we talked about the pulps coming from the Ordo Templi Orientis, right? That's where they came from. He is, Robert E. Howard is known as the godfather of the sword and sorcery subgenre. So if you're into this fantasy nerd stuff, you're going to love Conan. I'm trying to get Joe, my wife Josie, into this. She's reading all these fantasy books. What do you call it? Akhtar. I'm like, you got to watch Conan. Of course, now Conan is more, it's very male gazy. All right. Let's be fair about that. Now, Robert E. Howard committed suicide at age 30. Says that Howard's suicide and the circumstances surrounding it have led to speculation about his mental health. His mother had been ill with tuberculosis her entire life, and upon learning she had entered a coma from which she was not expected to wake, he walked out to his car, parked outside his kitchen window, and shot himself in the head while sitting in the driver's seat. Worst part about it, he died 8 hours later. I don't know if I like that. That's upsetting. Now, all right, so that's everybody involved with this epic film. A list of legends. Let's get into the movie. Plot spoilers coming. Let's go. starts out with a quote from Friedrich Nietzsche: "That which does not kill us makes us stronger," which is very kind of Darwinian socialism, right-wing vibes, you know? We talk about Nietzsche all the time. I talked about him in my Harry Potter shows that I've done 6 years ago. Because there's this concept in Harry Potter of apotheosis, right? Rebirth, death and rebirth of the hero after connecting with the divine. Usually harnessing the powers of the occult. The Übermensch, the Superman of the Nietzschean, Blavatsky, Hitler ideas. Utilizing alchemy, philosopher's stone, these kinds of occult ideas. Now, Conan in this movie is going to go through the same struggle, the same process. We're going to hear Conan's god is named Crom. And I know that's a struggle with Crom. Now, on Reddit, I've read discussions about whether or not Nietzsche, and thus Conan, were stories and ideas supporting fascism. Because apparently the creator of the story, Robert E. Howard, and Nietzsche were definitely not fascist or Nazis. All right. And the definition of fascism, considers the role of government far too much to fit into this. You know, the Conan world is a very savage, social Darwinian, might is right kind of vibe. So that's kind of what I would attribute it to more. I don't really know, though. I don't know why they think there's fascist elements in this, but I guess that's kind of where you would take that, right? Is this only the strongest survive? That was fascist Hitler's ideas. That's why they were doing eugenic stuff back in the day and arguably still to this day, because they believe in a class warfare and that some people are genetically superior to others, so on. I'll put a link in the show notes if you want to listen to the Harry Potter. November 2019, that's when I published it. So I'll put a link in the show notes. If you haven't heard the Harry Potter series, you're in for a treat as well, okay? Now, it starts out, we hear the wizard who's going to chronicle the whole movie, the whole saga. And listen to what he says at the beginning of the movie.
"Between the time when the oceans drank Atlantis and the rise of the sons of Arius, there was an age undreamed of. And unto this Conan, destined to bear the jeweled crown of Aquilonia upon a troubled brow. It is I, his chronicler, who alone can tell thee of his saga. Let me tell you of the days of high adventure."
"Between the time when the oceans drank Atlantis." We're talking about Atlantis right off the bat. So, you know, illuminate, confirm. Atlantis is the fabled island slash empire that ruled the world. It's the New World Order that they're all always aspiring to. Atlantis was able to perfect this technology, wisdom, magic, with Neoplatonic philosophies. And that's why all of the occultists are always obsessing over Atlantis and recreating it and finding it. Francis Bacon's book, New Atlantis, said that America was going to successfully do this. And we all know he was instrumental in the creation of the modern day America. Envisioned to be the utopia of Atlantis with a priesthood of science and scientists. And then they talk about Arius, which makes me think of Aryans, considered the master race by the Nazis. We're not going to go too deep into that since it's not the exact same word, but it's close, right? It's worth bringing up. And it's interesting because the Nazis in Germany were really into this Norse mythology. And, you know, you better believe Arnold would have been put on a pedestal in Nazi Germany for being this superior specimen of, you know, German blood or whatever. Then they had Aquilonia, is, I had to look this up. I don't know. I'm trying to look at my notes. Is this a real city or fictional? Or is it just in the story? It says, influenced by medieval Western Europe and the elements of colonial North America. The name is borrowed from Aquilonia. Okay. Got it. Okay, so it's a fictional area in Conan, but it comes from a real place called Aquilonia, a city of southern Italy between Venosa and Benevento. It is also an ancient name for Quimper and resembles that of Aquitaine, a French region ruled by England for a long portion of the Middle Ages. The name is derived from Latin aquilo, north wind. Aquila also means eagle in Latin. So what I'm trying to pull out of that is the symbolism here of the eagle. In the past, we've detailed the works of Manly P. Hall and Francis Bacon associating the eagle with the phoenix. And that is why the eagle is symbolic for America. It's actually the phoenix, the rebirth of Atlantis. So Conan, wearing the jewel of Aquilonia, is wearing the jewel of the eagle, the phoenix, death and rebirth. So, we're only in the credits still. Oh, boy. You see all kinds of Iron Age stuff. They're smelting things, rocks and swords, forging them, forging swords. Like a big flaming red phallus. Like I said, there's lots of male gaze stuff in this movie. It's very, very, right? There's a big red phallus for you. And the sword is the focus here of the credits. And it's a focus of the film as well. Which also makes me think of King Arthur, which I think we're going to come back to that later. But what we're dealing with is masculine energy, right? That big old red sword. A big old warrior. You know. Penetrating. Like, that's one of the ideas of masculinity is the penetration. The sword will penetrate and pierce the veil. That's what the Apollo space shuttle is shaped like, a big sword, a big phallus, penetrating the womb of the moon, the feminine goddess. All the occult ritual elements are right there. So at the beginning here, there's a father talking to his child. And, you know, spoiler alert, the child is Conan as a child, all right? This is how we're introduced to Conan. Listen to what the father tells this child.
Fire and wind come from the sky, from the gods of the sky. But Crumb is your god. Crumb, and he lives in the earth. Once giants lived in the earth, Conan. And in the darkness of chaos, they fooled Crumb. And they took from him the enigma of steel. Crumb was angered. And the earth shook. And fire and wind struck down these giants, and they threw their bodies into the waters. But in their rage, the gods forgot the secret of steel and left it on the battlefield. And we who found it are just men. Not gods, not giants. Just men. And the secret of steel has always carried with it a mystery. You must learn its riddle, Conan. You must learn its discipline. For no one in this world can you trust. Not men, not women, not beasts. This you can trust.
Now, what's he talking about? We got a lot to unpack there. There's some main elements I want to pull out and discuss. It talks about the darkness of chaos, right? And what do you do with chaos? Chaos is used to instill order. This is the motto of the 33rd degree of Freemasonry. This is arguably how the political world works. This is arguably the strategies used, is to say, oh my God, everything's a mess, everything's chaos. Let's put a savior in a place to bring the order that you need. And you're probably looking around like, is it bad? I guess. I don't know. Are they eating the pets? I don't know. They're eating the pets. They're eating the pets. That's what they say. Now, they talk about the Enigma of Steel. This is the Secret of Steel. I believe this is representing the Freemasonic Lost Word. We talked about this on the Olympics opening ceremony show, so listen to that if you want to learn about the Freemasonic Lost Word. Because it has to do with the worship of Osiris and Apollo. This is boiled down to the worship of the intellect in the Freemasonry, right? Osiris, Apollo is the sun, the primordial knowledge and the gift of intellect, right? And you'll notice, and it's they represent the search for the lost word, the same as the search for the lost phallus of Osiris, the golden phallus. Because they're trying to create the new solar religion, which is Luciferian. And they say that the giants of Earth stole the Enigma of Steel. And this is akin to Prometheus stealing the divine fire from the gods. This is, and that divine fire is the gift of intellect. And the secret gets lost, but then is found by mortal man, and that's Conan's mission to learn these secrets. He is searching for the Freemasonic lost word. Make no mistakes about it. Then we see an army of savages attacking Conan's family in the village. Conan's father, he's lopping off heads, you know. No shorts, no losses for William. Then they sick the Rottweilers on him, and they eat his ass up. Conan and his mom are just watching like, ah. Ah. And the leader of the bad guys, he rolls up on this horse. He's got this two-headed snake logo with a sun in between. I'm going to put images on my Instagram, at Isaac Weishaupt. Like and subscribe. I'll put the images on there. You can see what I'm talking about. And it's a two-headed snake logo with a sun in between, right? And he's wearing this armor that's the same. So this logo must be representative of something very important. And it's got an all-seeing eye in it as well. He takes off his helmet. It's James Earl Jones. It's Darth Vader himself. And he's got beautifully permed straight hair. Well, you find out later his name is Thulsa Doom. And we're going to come back to the symbolism of the snakes and the all-seeing eye later. No, I lie. We're doing it right now. I didn't see that in my notes. I thought it was in the conclusion. Snakes are symbols of rebirth and regeneration, okay? Because as I'm already alluding to, this story has Osirian solar death and resurrection vibes going on. All right, and that's what the snake represents. And you see double-headed animals with the 33rd degree of Freemasonry, right? The double-headed eagle. And Albert, and we already talked about the eagle. Come on, guys, you're smart people. I don't need to explain it that slowly to you. You get it. You see where all these things are lining up. Albert Mackey's Encyclopedia of Freemasonry says that the double-headed eagle is an emblem of imperial power going all the way back to Rome. And the single head is... the double head, it shows two single heads, meaning one refers to the west and one refers to the east of Rome. These are the two powers of Rome and Byzantium. And the Freemasons adopted it in 1758 because the body of Freemasonry was called the Council of Emperors of the East and West. So it was like a jurisdictional thing for the Freemasons is what the dual-headed eagle represented. Frederick II, the King of Prussia. Oh, there's a King of Prussia near where I grew up in PA there. I didn't know that. Is that what it's named after? I had never even thought. We call it K.O.P. We call it K.O.P. out in PA. I never even, you know, you grow up there and you don't think anything of it, but I wonder if that's what it refers to. I got some research to do. So Frederick II, King of Prussia, who was head of the ancient and accepted Scottish Rite, added to its 25 degrees eight more, which gets you the 33, right? And the double-headed eagle was adopted as the symbol of those 33rd and ultimate degrees, the whole ritual being considered as a representative of the Holy Empire, yada, yada, yada. So what are we saying? We're saying that the double heads represents the same idea of merging dual empires of East and West. So this snake cult of Thulsa Doom uses the symbol of the double-head snake must be the merging of two powerful empires. I'm guessing. East and West. And when we see the sun in the mix on this logo, it tells us there's a solar religious aspect to it. So the snake cult is like a Freemasonic organization seeking the lost word represented as the sun. And they're looking for the secret of steel as well, the lost word of Freemasonry. So anyway, they watch Dad get killed. So Mom grabs William's sword, Dad's sword, because she's not going. She's a warrior too. And James Earl Jones, Thulsa Doom, he gets all up in her business, and then he turns his head like he's gonna walk away. And he spins around and lops her head off too, while she was holding Conan's hand. I mean, how traumatic can it be? And we don't really know why this village got ransacked, but they end up separating everyone. They send the kids to a working slave camp, which is where Conan ends up. He spends years pushing this giant wheel in a circle. And it's called the Wheel of Pain. And what is it? We don't know. I would guess it's some kind of generator underground of some kind. It doesn't matter. Either way, Conan's been doing this for years. He's yoked. I guess no one was concerned with how big this dude was getting. No one was like, hey, you know what? This slave of ours, he's getting a little too big. Let's get him on the desk. He needs that desk job. He's looking kind of menacing. No. The Conan Unchained documentary, that's the Making of Conan documentary I watched, suggests that this Wheel of Pain grinds grain. I guess. I don't know. In real life, Arnold, he said he was freezing when they were filming this. He demanded hot tea and schnapps the whole time, apparently. So some red beard guy shows up, snags Conan, and because they do notice that he's getting huge. And they take him to this blood sport gladiator battle ring, and Conan figures it out real quick. He's going on killing spree. Crowd's loving him. They're up there stroking their Gandalf walking sticks, cheering him on. He gets this great warrior prize. They train him. And they take him back east. And it reminds me of Tibet, right? Like a Tibetan monk warrior or something. They teach him poetry and philosophy, and they're feeding him beautiful women to make sexy time pleasures. They're really taking care of him at this point. And here you get the coolest line in, I mean, film history, probably. This is the coldest line in film history, I'll say it. The Tibetan master guy, he's asking all of his students, he's like, you know, what's the best thing in life? And like, these idiots, they don't get it. They don't get it. Conan gets it. Arnold gets it. Listen, he says the coldest thing ever. Take a listen.
We've won again. This is good. But what is best in life?
The open step. Fleet horse. Falcons at your wrist. And the wind in your hair.
Wrong! Conan, what is best in life?
To crush your enemies. See them driven before you. And they hear a lamentation of the women.
That is good. That is good.
That's right. You you crush your enemies, and you hear the lamentations of their women. My God. Terrifying. So the red beard gives him freedom. Why? We don't know. And Conan runs out in the wild. And he hides in a cave. Now, the cave is very symbolic. It's a common trope. You see in the movies and stories. It's a great womb of creation, the matrix of creation, symbolizing the circle of life and death. All right? Because a cave could represent life or death. And it's related to the symbolism of the heart, a place where the self and the ego unite, which is interesting because usually read about the destruction of the ego, not union with it. And if you go to, I went to the University of Michigan website, it says, psychologists interpret a dreamer's dangerous passage through caves as symbolizing the search for the meaning of life in the deep strata of the maternal unconscious. As for Jung, it represents the security and impregnability of the unconscious. All right, so the search for the meaning of life in the maternal, the feminine, unconscious. And as for Conan, the definition of this makes sense. It says, caves are prevalent images. This is from the University of Michigan website. This is more on the nose of Conan. Caves are prevalent images in the world of myths, legends, and cults. They can be secret passageways to an underworld, places in which to make contact with the powers and forces that will eventually make their way into the world of light. In popular legend, caves usually house gnomes, spirits, dragons, and treasure. They are often the site for initiation ceremonies. So, maybe when we talk about the King Arthur thing, there's an element there because King Arthur is seeking the divine feminine. And this is similar to the idea of entering the cave into finding the maternal, the feminine unconscious. Because we already know the film is full of masculinity, all these big red swords and big old mans, violence. Now, there's a Conan, there's the, so in this scene, apparently behind the scenes, in the making of Conan documentary, Arnold couldn't get up the rocks fast enough, and those wolves they unleashed actually got him and they tore his ass up. He had stitches, he was bleeding, he was a real mess. Anyway, so Conan gets in the cave. There's skeletons everywhere. One of them is sitting on a throne with this massive sword. And, you know, Conan, he's like, ooh, baby, let me see that big old sword. And he snags it. Skeleton collapses. Conan deduces that this was Crom. All right. Pays a little homage to Crom, this god, and dips with the sword. So, yeah, Conan went to the cave and he found God. He found Crom. And he begins his path of learning the secret of steel, finding the Freemasonic lost word. So he's out doing his thing. A woman sees him, invites him to warm himself by her fire, right? Because she heard this prophecy that there was this man from the north who was a conqueror who would someday be the king and crush the snakes. Take a listen.
They said he would come. From the north, a man of great strength, a conqueror, a man who would someday be king by his own hand, one who would crush the snakes of the earth.
Snakes? Did you say snakes?
What is it you see?
A symbol, perhaps on a shield. Two snakes coming together, facing each other, but they're one.
With a sun and a moon below. Black sun, black moon.
Yes.
There is a price, barbarian.
Conan's like, hold up, you talking about snakes? Because he remembers, he's traumatized, right? He saw Thulsa Doom with the snakes, and she's like, yeah. A two-headed snake, a sun, and a moon. He's like, that's right, the dude with the perm. I remember this. That's the guy I'm after. So, of course, they make sexy time. She's talking about the crossroads being the place he can find this snake in Zamora. You know, the crossroads, of course. So then she turns into a snake. Should have seen that coming. So he tosses her ass into the fireplace. She starts bugging out, takes off as this being of light. Conan's like, Crom, is it you? Crom, is it you? I guess. I don't know. This movie's kind of strange. We meet Subutai. This is a thief, and he's begging for food because he's chained up. So Conan releases him, and Subutai prays to the four winds. Conan's like, I pray to Crom, but Crom doesn't listen, so I don't pray too much. But he still believes, because if Conan dies, he still has to solve the Riddle of Steel. Otherwise, Crom will kick him out of Valhalla. It's a whole thing. So Conan and Subutai, they're buddying up. They find civilization. They're shopping wares. They're eating meats, slapping camels, trying to find this snake cult. And we hear in one of these towns or villages or whatever, we hear talk about Set. Take a listen to this.
How about two snakes coming together over a black sun? A magnificent standard.
The only snakes I know of are those of Set and those cursed towers. They have spread to every city. 2-3 years ago, it was just another snake cult. Now, everywhere. It is said that they are deceivers. They murder people in the night. I know nothing. Hey. Black Lotus. Stygian, the best.
This better not be Haga.
I would sell Haga to a slayer such as you.
Now this is important because Set is the adversarial force, the satanic force. This goes back to ancient Egypt with Set as the lord of the desert. All right, the outer place, as opposed to the fertile black land where alchemy comes from. Now, in the mythology, Set kills his brother Osiris, and Thoth magically restores Osiris after Isis finds all the penis except for the one. You know which one we're talking about, the golden phallus. That's that flaming red sword. Now, I believe this is the secret of the sword. It's the phallus, all right? That's why you got all these snakes and swords everywhere. And we hear that snakes are coming together over a black sun, right? Not just a regular sun, a black sun. That is the black sun of alchemy, which makes sense because of the black sun and the black fertile soil and all that stuff. So they go to climb Snake Tower because that's, you know, they hear that's where the snake cult is. Like, duh, of course they're going to be in Snake Tower. And they join up with this woman named Valeria. She's another thief. And they get in there and they witness this ceremony with the high priest. This is second to Thalsa Doom. But Thalsa Doom is 1,000 years old, you hear? And you see white robes, like it's a Diddy White party, candles, chanting, and a woman's getting stripped down. Something smells pretty bad, apparently. Very Illuminati confirmed, right? Because the white robes represents divinity. That's why Diddy was... I talked about this on Breaking Social Norms with Josie. The white... Because Diddy would kick people out of his parties if the white was like cream or off-white. He's like, no, white. Because white is connection to the gods, to the divine. That's why you see all these druidics and ancient cultures wearing the white robes. And you'll notice the snake call, they walk around with their arms crossed. This is symbolism of Osiris. Again, the death and resurrection of Osiris plays a role here, as it does in a lot of the occult systems. Osiris depicted buried with the arms crossed and little weapons also crossed, even his legs. Anyway, meanwhile, Conan, he's snooping around and he finds the stone, the jewel. And it's in a serpent statue room. And he recognizes that there's the double-headed snake logo again. So he lifts the stone, but this massive serpent gets unleashed, huge, bigger than Anaconda. Comes to attack him. Conan puts a dagger into its head, blood spilling everywhere. It's wrapping around Conan, but Conan gets the sword and cuts it up. No shorts, no losses from Conan either. And then we go back to the ceremony. The naked woman, she gets dropped into the pit because she's supposed to be blood sacrificed to this giant snake. But now they realize, hey, what happened to our snake god? Well, Conan sliced his ass up to steal that gem. So, you know, everyone escapes. Conan and Valeria, they get themselves a nice little tent or whatever. You know what time it is. You know what Conan's about to do. This is why Arnold slept with the babysitter. He's not slowing down for nobody. Kennedy, Shriver's, nothing. Nothing's going to slow him down. So Conan, he's rich. He's flexing at the bar. People notice this, so they drug him and they drag him to King Orsic at the usurper's chambers. And he arrests all three of the thieves, but surprise, surprise, he's on their side. He wants to shut down the snake cults because his daughter joined the snake cult. Kind of like Kubrick, right? His daughter joined the Church of Somethingology, and maybe that's why Eyes Wide Shut. We don't know. His daughter joined the snake cult at the Mountain of Power, and she was supposed to be Thulsa Doom's lady. So he's like, look, you three, go get my daughter back. Valeria, she wants to just quit while they're ahead and leave. She's like, look, listen, I just want to get wifed up by Conan over here. But we all know that's not Conan's style. So he leaves her ass behind. Not so fun fact. King Orsic's daughter was played by Valerie Quinessin, and tragically, she died at age 31 in a car accident. So, sad. So Conan, he goes towards the Mount of Power. The Children of Doom lead him to the mountain. He gets near, meets up with the wizard. That's the narrator. So now they got another buddy. And he goes to the local tribe of people who appear to be snake worshippers. And they're not catching on to Conan's secret agenda. Right? He ends up finessing one of the priests, steals his robe. Now Conan looks like a snake priest, which allows him to get up onto the Mountain of Power and get close. And Thulsa Doom comes out. He speaks to the crowd. He's preaching about how, about facing emptiness, right? And you heard this earlier from the priest who asked Conan how he will become empty. What is this? Well, this is nihilism. This is Nietzscheism. What does that even mean to become empty? Is that destruction of the ego? Because nihilism is a belief that all morals and values are just constructs and one should only believe in nothing. And philosophers have been worried this would collapse society. A mixture of apathy and atheism, for sure, had an effect. Now, fun fact, James Earl Jones, like I said, he was in the Army Rangers. He said he had worked with snakes during training. He had to sleep with one in his uniform and, like, hang out with this snake for a whole, like, training exercise. And then at the end of the exercise, they had to kill and eat this thing. That's hardcore, man. So Thulsa Doom realizes Conan is an infidel, so they snatch his ass up. They're like, give me the Eye of the Serpent. That's the jewel. I thought it was the Jewel of Aquilonia, but apparently it's the Eye of the Serpent. I don't know. Conan reveals to Thulsa Doom that he was the one who killed his mother and father and stole the sword. So Doom tells him steel means more than gold or jewels, and he claims he knows the riddle of steel. So Doom is lecturing Conan at this point, and he tells him the secret of steel. It's that he says the riddle is that flesh is actually stronger than steel. Take a listen.
Where is the eye of the serpent? Rexor says that you gave it to a girl. Probably for a mere night's pleasure. What a loss. People have no grasp of what they do. You broke into my house, stole my property, murdered my servants and my pets, and that is what grieves me the most.
You killed my snake. Thorgrim is beside himself with grief.
He raised that snake from the time it was born.
You killed my mother. You killed my father. You killed my people. You took my father's sword.
It must have been when I was younger. There was a time, boy, when I searched for steel. And steel meant more to me than gold or jewels.
The riddle of steel.
Yes. You know what it is, don't you, boy? Shall I tell you? It's the least I can do. Steel isn't strong, boy. Flesh is stronger. Look around you. There, on the rocks. That beautiful girl.
Come to me, my child.
That is strength, boy. That is power. The strength and power of flesh. What is steel compared to the hand that wields it? Look at the strength of your body, the desire in your heart. I gave you this. Such a waste. Contemplate this on the tree of woe.
False of Doom then makes a woman kill herself for him. Why not? But what is steel compared to the hand that wields it? That's the philosophy here. So Doom then orders Conan to the Tree of Woe to be crucified. And what's this tree? Conan's up there with his crucified, right? On this X. Again with the X of Osiris. Crucified and left for dead in the desert with these vultures circling and pecking at him. And then out of nowhere, Conan bites. He bites the vulture. Now, the director said that this was supposed to be the opposite of Christ, this crucifixion scene. Conan was defiant and not asking God why he has forsaken him. All right. Also, fun fact, Arnold actually bit directly into the neck of a dead vulture, which is pretty crazy. That's commitment. So Conan, he's out in the desert, symbolizing Set, the opposing force of Christ. Does it fit into the story and the overall theory? I don't know. We'll see. I'm just throwing that out there. So after a couple of days of him being on this tree eating vultures, here comes his friends that are rescued, Valeria and one of the other guys? Was it Subutai? And they take him up to the wizard to get him healed because he's about to die. And he writes all over Conan's body and he's all tied up. And a storm rolls through and envelops Conan trying to take him away. Now this is very, reminded me of Twin Peaks Season 3. Episode 8, to be specific. But you can see spirits of beings fighting to take Conan away. But Conan revives, and now it's back to the mission. And we hear that the Mountain of Power is hollow, that False of Doom lives inside of it, and there's caves to sneak into where you could steal the princess. But it seems Conan, he just wants Doom. You know what I mean? He's just like, I'm focused. I'll maybe do a little side mission, but I'm taking Doom out. So the three thieves, they take off to the Mountain of Power. They find these caves and they sneak in. Conan, he's all oiled up. Black war paint, looking like Predator Commando vibes. I'm like, hell yeah. And true to the rumor, there's a whole city of activity going on inside. Naked women tied up. Orgy activities, looking like Caligula. Out comes this giant cast iron stew with body parts in it. Oh my goodness, like a mocajete, a human mocajete. They spot the princess overseeing everything at the foot of Doom. And they're like, there she is, and there he is. And Doom, his eyes turn into vertical slits like a snake, and then it happens. One of the iconic scenes, he shapeshifts into a snake. This was mind-blowing in 1982. Make no mistakes about it. He turns into a straight-up snake with a hood on. So these three thieves, they start lighting curtains on fire. They're stabbing up the guards. They're taking off heads. Doom slithers off, leaves the princess behind. Here comes his number two. That's the Oakland Raider dude, Lemmy from Motorhead. Conan tips over the Mocajete, takes on number three. Another dude is about as buff as Arnold. And amidst the fighting, the column of three snakeheads falls over. Conan and the crew, they get out of there. They take off. And Doom returns back to human form. And he helps number two, number three, because they got their butts kicked. More badass barbarian talk about how he's going to teach them. I'm going to teach you why you're afraid of the night. And he shoots a snake that he turned into an arrow and hits Valeria with it. Now, she had told the wizard she would pay the gods, meaning she was the blood sacrifice to save Conan. And before she dies, all she wants is Conan to kiss her and to breathe her last breath into his mouth. Kind of romantic a little bit, right? Sad, romantic, kind of all these things. So they go, so she dies, and you know, they recover her body, whatever, whatever, and they burn her body in a pyre. And this is, you see this in the pagan stuff all the time. You know, Game of Thrones and Star Wars, they're always big on cremation. Has all these earth-type elements. Roman empires were doing this. Now, what's interesting is that in the making of Conan documentary, that composer we talked about earlier, that Greek name that I butchered, Basil. The scene of the pyre actually came to him in a dream he had about his wife and two daughters who went to Florence, Italy, and in the dream, they all died. So he had a dream about this somehow. Anyhow, they're burning up Valeria, but Conan won't cry. He's got someone to do that for him. You know, Arnold in the 80s action, it was breeding a lot of ideas about masculinity, right? Men shouldn't express emotions. It's weak, right? That's debatable, you know. I think on some levels it is bad to not express emotions, but on other angles, you know, sometimes you need that. I don't know. I could be pulled over to either side of that argument. I don't necessarily agree with it on a human experience level for men. I think it's very detrimental. But as far as succeeding in a capitalistic social construct for quote unquote, like, you know, real men, like, I don't know, sometimes you gotta suck it up, buttercup. Like, I don't like it either. So I can be talked to either side of that argument. It's like, I support going to therapy. I do. But you also can't let it bog you down and make you like, be like, oh my God, I've got all these issues. I can't deal with life. Like, no, you go to therapy to get some clarity, let it out. But then you got to get back on the horse, man. You can't just be like, oh, I was so traumatized. Oh, my God. Yeah, absolutely. There's sympathy for that. You need to, like, get that off your chest, address it. But, like, you can't live down there. You got to kind of move on, right? So, anyways, Conan has the princess tied up. I didn't realize they snatched her ass up, but they got her. And they're prepping. They're like, look, we're taking Thulsa Doom out. I'm done with this nonsense. They could have cut 30 minutes out of this, but it actually goes by pretty quick. It's fine. So they're getting ready for the final battle. Lots of pointy sticks, traps, arrows. And Conan, he says a prayer to Crom for the first time in the film. And what does he pray for? Revenge. Ooh, cold-blooded. Here comes the snake cult guys. They're getting served up. They got the axes, the sticks, swords, Motorhead coming at Conan. Motorhead's got the big Midsommar hammer. A big mallet. He catches a swinging nail to the chest. Motorhead comes at Conan. Oh, no, I'm sorry. That was number two. The number two guy catches a nail to the chest. Then Motorhead comes at Conan. Conan gets a vision of Valeria. And it inspires him. He starts dicing up Motorhead, serving him. Now it's time. Finally, jeez. Time for the final boss, Thulsa Doom. Princess yells for Doom to help her, and he tries to shoot her with a snake arrow. Now, this is where I talk about G.I. Joe. There was an animated G.I. Joe the movie in the 80s. The main character was Serpentor. And Serpentor had these snakes that he would pull off, and they would straighten out like an arrow, and he would throw them at people. All right? And what's interesting is that Serpentor was created from the DNA of the greatest leaders in history. Caesar, Napoleon, Attila the Hun, right? And in G.I. Joe the movie, there was also this character named Globulus, who was this immortal biotech creature that had limbs that were replaced with snake parts. So he had a giant serpent tail. And his whole crew, Cobra La, they were trying to kill humanity, and they were hiding out in the Himalayas, much like this sort of Tibetan training that Conan had. So that was the G.I. Joe connection. Hope I didn't overhype that too much. That's all I got. That's all I got. So Thulsa Doom, he rides back to his snake cult at the Mountain of Power. But we know Conan's going to finish this job. So Conan sneaks into the mountain again. We see the all-seeing eye. We see a compass and square symbol. If you didn't believe in the Freemason symbolism of this story, there's a compass and square symbol. So, and again, check out the images, Instagram, at Isaac Weishaupt. Link is always in the show notes. So Thulsa Doom, he's at the top of the stairs on the mountain. He's hyping up the crowd, right? Talking about gleaming in the eye of Set. He's trying to say, basically, he's Conan's new daddy. Because Conan needs Thulsa Doom. But we know Conan's not feeling that. So he chops off Thulsa Doom's head and tosses it down the stairs. And then he drops the sword. Is this the Riddle of Steel? And he realizes the sword isn't by itself powerful. It is, in fact, the hand that wields it. The power was within him the whole time. So the crowd drops their candles into the water, extinguishing the flames of Thulsa Doom. Conan tosses a flame up at the peak of the mountain, setting it on fire, and the final message scrolls. And we find out Conan returned the daughter to King Orsic, and his crew went out west on adventures, getting into fights and such, and he became the king. So in conclusion, great movie. It got a 4.5-star rating from me on Letterboxd with the liked it heart. That's a big deal. You can't ask for much more. And if you liked it, if you liked Conan, check out the making of documentary Conan Unchained. The filming started in 1977, right after Pumping Iron. I didn't know that. And the original vision Oliver Stone had for the script, he said it should be like a James Bond story. Kind of revisited every year. And it would get a sequel, and it's almost just as good. It has elements of Thoth. Then there's the third one, Red Sonja. I wanted to like it so hard, but I didn't. It needed Arnold. It needed more Arnold in it. Sorry, my throat's going out. Now, let's wrap up the symbolism. Nihilism, of course. Nietzsche quoted at the beginning. Conan's a bit of an atheist at the beginning, not believing Crom would help him. He became a bit apathetic on his journey. Then you got the logos of the wizard. It's actually some triangles. It's actually the KKK symbol. I mean, is that tied into this idea of Nazi ideology? I don't know. Then you got snakes, of course. The first secret society ever is rumored to be the Brotherhood of the Snake. I'm going to read to you from theosophyworld.com. In the ancient traditions of many cultures, it is the symbol of wisdom and eternity. In popular Christian lore, it's a symbol of the devil or the fallen angel. In the East, the serpent and the dragon have been the symbols of the sage or the wise man. In Buddhism, according to some traditions, Buddha was protected by nagas or serpents at birth and after his death. Among the Egyptians, the serpent Uraeus was put on their royal headdress. In the New Testament, Christ exhorted the apostles to be wise as serpents. The Ophite Gnostics were known as the Brotherhood of the Serpents and displayed a living serpent to symbolize the Christos principle. Helena Blavatsky wrote that the serpent became a symbol of evil only in the Middle Ages. So there you go. The occultists believe the serpent is the true God. And the Brotherhood of the Snakes comes from the Gnostics, the Ophite Gnostics. And the logos and the symbols you see in Conan, you see a lot of as above, so below, compass and square stuff around the snake heads. And we had talked in the past, if you listen to my Kanye West, Julia Fox show from 22, we talked about the Anunnaki drinking the blood of the fallen comrades to sort of find immortality. And the truthers, they talk a lot about this idea of, shape-shifting lizard people from Draco. That's David Icke said. Which ironically supports his Gnostic worldview, whatever. And the whole idea of serpent worship is interesting because the oldest reference to religion ever found was a cave in Botswana that they showed 70,000 years ago they were doing snake worship. And then you've got all the ideas of dragons and all that stuff. Now, if you want to go deep into serpent worship, I've got a free book for you. My first book, A Grand Unified Conspiracy Theory. If you sign up for my free email newsletter at IlluminatiWatcher.com, go to the Start Here tab. If you can't find the sign up, it's on there. I will send you A Grand Unified Conspiracy Theory for free, the ebook. All right? And I think I got a discount code for the signed paperback on Gumroad if you want that. It's one of the books, it's the book I handed Joe Rogan back in the day when I seen him in Salt Lake City. I handed him a book because he is in there because I mentioned him. So sign up for my free email newsletter. Now, is the religion embracing Freemasonry or is Conan battling Freemasonry? I think Thulsa Doom's snake cult represents Set. It has symbolism of snakes. It's got compass and square. It's got the solar religion, Osiris, all-seeing eyes. This is Freemasonry, right? Let's go back one final time to Albert Mackey's encyclopedia defining the lost word. Gosh, excuse me. The mythical history of Freemasonry informs us that there once existed a word of surpassing value, and claiming in profound veneration that this word was known to but few, and it was at length lost, and that a temporary substitute for it was adopted. But as the very philosophy of Freemasonry teaches us that there can be no death without a resurrection, no decay without a subsequent restoration, on the same principle it follows that the loss of the word must suppose its eventual recovery. The narrative of its loss and the search for its recovery becomes a mythical symbol of the decay and loss of the true religion among the ancient nations. At and after the dispersion of the plains of Shinar and of the attempts of the wise men, the philosophers, the priests, to find and retain it in their secret mysteries and initiations, which events been designed as the spurious Freemasonry of antiquity. What is he even saying? I don't know, but here's my guess. When he says Shinar is known as Babylon. And this is the ultimate storyline here. They want to instill the religion of Babylon again. The religion of antinomianism and Set. And Conan was the savior to break it up. He was kind of the Christ figure. And in Albert Mackey's encyclopedia, there's an entry for Babylon, and it says that Babylon was once the most magnificent city of the ancient world. So in Christianity, it's like the devil's playground of Babylon, but in Freemasonry, they're like, oh, it's the greatest city ever. We could do all the things we want to do here. Butt pleasures? Whatever. And that seems to be, I would guess, Conan is the opposing force. You could even argue Conan's like a Nazi force because Hitler didn't like the Masons either. So I don't know. because Hitler didn't like the Freemasons because he thought it was, the Freemasons was full of the you know who's. So there you go, Conan the Barbarian. What a movie, huh? We laughed, we cried, we saw some sexy time. Man, you can't ask for much more. And the greatest part is the sequel, which maybe I'll cover it someday here. Leave a note in the comments if you want the sequel, Conan the Destroyer, on the comments on the Instagram post or Patreon. If you guys want the sequel, I will do the sequel someday. So, there you go. Hope you enjoyed it. Sorry, my throat's like giving up. My throat's had enough. You know what it is? It's the air quality. We have fires in Utah. The air is garbage. Makes it hard to talk. So, hope you enjoyed that film analysis. Calls of action. You get homework too. All right. If you're on Letterboxd, that's an app where you review movies. Go find me and follow me at Isaac Weishaupt. It's very fun. Also, go to my Instagram to check out the images of Conan at Isaac Weishaupt. Link is always in the show notes. And I need some 5 stars, okay? I'm petitioning you for a 5-star. So pull out your phone right now, as long as you're not driving or whatever. Pull out your phone and leave a 5-star review. You don't have to write anything if you don't want to. If you want to go above and beyond, you can write something. I'll comb through some of the reviews in the next week here. I need some 5 stars because there's 1-star haters out there and I get a lot of them. And what happens is they wreck my score, my rating score, and that hurts the algorithm, the new god of the 21st century, the algorithm. And the only way I can counter that is by you helping me drop a 5-star, okay? All right. Thank you for your support. Thank you for listening to this show. Till next time, stay positive.